Welcome to our Spiritual Spotlight series, where we explore the vast and mysterious world of spirituality. Whether you're seeking guidance on your spiritual journey, interested in learning more about different spiritual practices and beliefs, or simply looking for inspiration to deepen your connection with the divine, then this is a show just for you. Join us as we delve into topics such as mindfulness, meditation, manifestation, energy healing, and much more. Our aim is to provide a safe and inclusive space for all listeners to explore their spirituality and connect with like-minded individuals. So grab a cup of tea, get comfortable, and let's journey together on the path of spiritual awakening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Spiritual Spotlight series. Today, I am joined by Leah Bowden. She is the owner of Light Speak Transformational Arts. She is an animal and interspecies communicator, a soul journey energy portrait artist, which those are amazing. She also has a Light Speak Emporium, and she's also a spiritual guidance counselor. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so happy you're here.
I am so delighted to be with you, and I'm so delighted you're doing this show.
Oh, thank you. Right? That is so sweet. So I kind of want to take it back, probably way back, you know, because I always like to talk about people and their childhoods. And kind of like, when did you first realize, I know that you're very intuitively guided. When did you first realize that you may have this kind of extra intuitive sense about you?
Oh my gosh. I didn't know that I had an extra intuitive sense really until I began receiving feelings that when I would be talking to someone, and this was when I was in my 30s.
Wow.
That when I was talking to someone, I would all of a sudden have to angle my hand in a certain way and stop what I was saying because I was getting a download.
Right.
I recognized there was something coming into my brain that was not my own thought.
Okay.
So that's when I knew that it was something extra. But when I was 5 years old, I had what I call my awakening. I don't know that it was a spiritual awakening, but it was my awakening to being on the planet. We had a little house on a small city plot of land in Schenectady, New York. So I took a little walk out through the small yard and then around the back of the garage. And I came to a certain spot. It was right under a lilac tree. And there were lilies of the valley growing under the lilac tree. And so I remember liking those two things so much. So I looked at them, and then I don't know why I looked up and I saw the sky. And all of a sudden it was like, boom, oh, I'm here. And there's the sky. And then I thought, as long as I remember the sky, I know I'll be safe. Those were the exact words that hit me when I was 5 years old. And then I had the thought, I'm not going to go and tell mommy.
Interesting.
This is mine.
Okay.
Yes. And so I think that that's when I first recognized that I was separated from something big that I was part of.
Mm-hmm.
And that all I had to do for the rest of my life was remember that I was part of something bigger. It was the sky. And so as I grew, I didn't think of it all the time. It was not something I had to keep on reminding myself.
Right.
I had a very nice childhood. Someone at a class that I once taught many years ago, her name was Lynn, who also was a spiritually engaged person and teacher, she said, how did you get to be able to do what you do?
Yeah.
And I said, it's because I had loving parents. The older I get, the more I understand, although it is shocking to me, that most people seem to have had challenges in their childhoods that prevented them from opening up to the fullness of who they were and are, that the, most people seem to have grown up with some event or ongoing set of circumstances that convinced them that they were not brilliant, gorgeous, radiant, divine, and worthy. And that is a shame. That is a shame on humanity, that we have allowed ourselves to do that to our children because it was done to us. And that's the way it goes, the cycle.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you ask about my childhood. It was happy. My parents were good to each other. They were very good to me and my brother. They weren't perfect. I certainly was not perfect as a parent. But I never thought that I was worthless.
Mm.
And yet, I still, in my private meditations, when I think about just yesterday, I was looking at why I have this cough. And in, I looked in my heart, and there was this little stretch of being mm-hmm. in me that felt rough and felt unloved and felt unworthy. So it's part of the human condition. And it makes me wonder, frankly, about the concept of original sin, which is a whole other topic. I am not Catholic. I have no interior, intimate knowledge of what it was like to grow up Catholic.
Right. The
concept of original sin has always intrigued me, because how else to, I mean, I can understand how else to account for that feeling that we're just not good enough.
It's so true. You bring up such a valid point, because when I look back to my childhood, there were pivotal moments of very shocking events that, you know, and I feel like if I didn't, and I, as I'm talking to you, I feel like if I didn't know, maybe internally, maybe I didn't know what I didn't know, you know, like they say, you know, what
right.
I don't know if I would be as open as I am now. You know, mm-hmm. I had a parent in a mental institution for 15 years. We had lack of food. We had these like moments, and it's not like I'm sending it for sympathy or anything like that, but it's interesting. Like you said, it is a shame, because I do look at my own kids and I love to give them space to be themselves. Know that you're loved no matter what, no matter what the conditions are, someone has your back, you know? And it's so important in society today, because I feel like a lot of people feel alone. And that's kind of like my mission in these interviews. And I love the fact that you're like, when I was 5 years old, I knew this within me that I was not alone. And we have this team that is always with us no matter what.
Yeah, that team.
Forward.
I know. And so it always has been that when I started receiving downloads, and I'm just wondering, I mean, on this show, you must have used that word. Other people must have used that word, right? Should I explain what I
mean? Of course. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. People are well aware of downloads, but if you want to kind of explain go ahead. No.
So when I first began receiving downloads, it was definitely a they. It was definitely a they. As high as it gets, it's always still a they. Wow. Except for one time when, and this was really, really intriguing to me, sometime in the 1990s, mm-hmm. I was at my desk doing my work as a public relations counselor, typing away, and all of a sudden, and this was well after I had been receiving downloads mm-hmm. regularly, every day.
Wow.
I got this feeling like knock, knock, knock in the back of my head. Literally, it just felt like someone was knocking inside my head. So I listened, and here's what I heard. I created you to live in joy. What are you doing working? And I said, wait a minute. I don't believe in a creator that uses the first personal pronoun.
Ooh.
I don't believe in that story of the individual being who created everything.
Yeah.
There was no doubt to me that my team was coming forth to me saying, it's a beautiful day outside, go outside and play. And yet there was that, I created you. My creator was talking to me. God, that's the word that we use. God was talking to me. I had no doubt. It wasn't a question of, oh my God, God is talking to me. No. I knew that that was entirely possible.
Yeah.
And that it happened many times. But it was the question of definition that really intrigued me. So yeah, but the team, the they, it's always, it feels like a multiple voice.
It feels the same way to me. It feels like, you know, yeah, it feels like a collective consciousness, like,
right,
you know, like, okay, we're here to support you. So as you were starting to receive these downloads, I know that you were working in public relations, which I think is very interesting that you were working in that. When did you kind of shift out of that and like go into more of an intuitive career?
I'll tell you, I did them simultaneously.
Oh, interesting.
Frankly, I had to make money.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, the money that I made that I brought into our household was not pin money. It was essential. And I didn't have the courage to put myself out there full time as an intuitive. And I look at some of the people who I know, Katie Rubin comes to mind.
Yeah.
That I know her mostly through Facebook, but I have actually also met her. Younger women, particularly whom I identify.
Yeah.
And who I watch Katie, for example, and I say, oh my God, if I had had the courage to do that, that's what I would have been doing, because she just happens to resonate with everything about her resonates with me. So I started doing readings for people, let's say in the 70s, actually. In the 70s, I started doing readings and then I continued, but it was very informal and I didn't charge anything. And then in the 90s, I found the energy portraits began pouring through me. And so I began advertising and marketing and doing those sort of on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then I retired in 2014. I retired from my PR career.
Gotcha.
And then I did more and more and more of these because I had more time, frankly, to do the marketing, you know, and to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I've been doing more and more and more of them.
Did you find though, like, cause I'm a registered nurse and I work, you know, that's my day job. And, you know, I run a doctor's office and my side job is my intuitive work. Did you find though, that there were learning experiences within your professional career that kind of, cause for me, I feel like I still have healing work to do within my professional career that I haven't quite wrapped up yet.
Actually, it kind of was the opposite.
Okay.
The information that I was receiving that I grokked, that I placed in my whole being, both intellectually and physically, informed my ability to be a better PR counselor because it helped me sit more comfortably in what I knew was true.
Right.
And what I knew was where the power would be.
Right.
I knew, for instance, I knew the words to use when I was writing my press releases. I became more self-confident, I guess is the
I
word.
I love that.
And isn't that one of the focuses that we have when we're doing spiritual work, is to develop the confidence to walk through the world knowing that our steps are sure, or as sure as they can be.
That is so true, because I do feel like, I mean, even myself as a healer, there have been times that my confidence, I've doubted myself and doubted my abilities. And I love that you're sharing that. No, this helped me to become more self-confident, to really own my truth and own my path. I love that.
Yeah.
So with the Soul Journey energy portraits, you said you started doing those in the 90s.
Yes, that's
how,
right.
How did that kind of, I mean, cause there, if anyone, I highly recommend if anyone wants a soul portrait, 1,000,000%, you need to go to you. And like, cause they're gorgeous and they're amazing. And I love the journey that you walk the client through as you're drawing it, you sing, it's a beautiful journey. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience?
Sure. Because it was really an interesting thing. I found an energy healer in Schenectady who prefers to be anonymous.
Okay.
So I'm just going to call him
Energy Healer.
The Energy Healer.
Okay.
Although he calls himself, or used to, a stress reduction facilitator. And I like that because
I do.
No one can heal anyone else.
That's
what
so true.
What we do is help people remove obstructions mm-hmm. to the flow.
Right? Yeah.
So the facilitator had been working on me for a number of years. He would come to my house. I would lie down on his table. And as he was working on me, doing classic energy work, pulling things out of my body, infusing my body with divine healing energy, he would say, for instance, "Oh, can you see this beautiful jade green light coming out of your heart?" And I would say, "No, I don't see that stuff." And he'd say, "Oh," and he'd go on. Well, one day I knew that he had been having heart problems.
Oh, wow.
And so one day he said to me during our session, when we're done here, I want you to look at my energy field and tell me what you see. I said, "I don't think I can do that." And he said, "Just give it a try." Well, when he said that, I knew that he knew that I could. So after our session, we went into a room and I kept the lights low because I knew that I would be able to see mm-hmm. better with the lights low. And so I looked at his heart and I didn't see anything with my physical eyes.
Right.
But I knew that if there were a color in that space, that it would be pink.
Okay.
And I knew that there was another color coming off here that would be green, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, "Yes." Now, and he asked me to describe what I saw of the whole rest of his flow. So I did. And he said, "You're absolutely right. You have seen all of the colors that my energy body is emanating."
Wow.
And then he said, and he knew that I had just bought 4 sticks of pastels. It was probably, you know, red, blue, white,
what's
the other one? Yellow.
Yeah.
And that I had just recently bought some large pieces of pastel paper, because when I would go to Arlene's in Albany to go get my supplies, my painting supplies, because at that time I was just painting, you know, acrylics, just regular paintings. I always looked at the pastels and the pastel papers, and they were so yummy. I just wanted to try it. So he knew that I had bought these things. So he said, "Next week when I come, I want you to paint what you see with your new pastels." So I did. And that was my first energy portrait. That was it. And it was very exciting. Now, that portrait and the next several portraits after that, maybe even like 30 portraits after that, I don't know. It was just the art. And mm-hmm. I thought, "Oh, this is art." But then all of a sudden I would get these urges, a feeling in my throat.
Yeah.
And I had to release it because I knew that it was part of the experience. And so I began letting whatever was in my throat come out, and it was guidance, and then it was singing, and then it was chanting. And at first, some of the chanting sounds, I didn't know how they would sound. Some of them sounded like growls or dolphin noises. And I thought, "Oh my God, this is so embarrassing," right? Because I was still relating to my expression in the world, that it was something my mother would not be embarrassed by.
I understand.
Right. Something that was civilized.
Yeah.
Something that we could all recognize as either beautiful song or correct speech.
Yeah.
The conventional way of thinking about ourselves. But of course, the more I did it, the more I realized this is part of the experience. And then my clients gave me very positive feedback that everything that I was saying and chanting and singing was mattered to them. And when I would sit across from someone doing the portrait and I would see them crying, I recognized, "Oh, there's something here."
Yeah.
So I developed, again, it was a matter of confidence, this all comes through. And so first there was the art, then there was the art and the vocal expression. And And then I maybe 10, 20 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, I began seeing more and more opalescent white. An opalescent white. Now, there is the system that I use just flows through me.
Right.
In fact, I had to unlearn what I had learned many years ago about what colors each of the chakras was.
Okay.
Because I had to honor the authenticity, not only of my client, but of myself. That right. is of the mix of both of us right. in the flow. And so I understood my own process said, okay, this color means this, this color means that. Iridescent white or a metallic white is angelic presence. And I've been seeing, I began to see a lot of this iridescent white.
Right.
In addition to regular white. Regular white is the presence of spirit. Mm-hmm. Iridescent white is the presence of angelic energy.
Right.
So they've evolved. They've yeah. evolved.
Yeah, because I feel like, I mean, I know that a lot of my friends have had soul portraits and I love hearing the stories of them. And I know you channel. It's like, for me, it feels very interdimensional. It feels like you're channeling in a lot of different realms.
Yes.
It's like past life, current life, you know, and it's fascinating to hear how it all blends together.
I know. And one of the things that I've learned from this process is that when I'm, this process involves my receiving impulses and communication from aspects of you,
right.
of my client, that do not live on earth.
Right.
They may be angelic, they may be divine, they may be living in one of those galaxies that
right.
the recent photograph shows are farther away than we can possibly imagine, but that everywhere there is life, there yeah. is us
right.
everywhere. That when Creator goes, you know, with the image or the impulse of the that particular soul in the creation, that goes everywhere. Doesn't
yeah.
go just on Earth.
Right.
And so I'll get an impulse from an off-planet being who is you. You are as much yourself out there as mm-hmm. you are here sitting across from me. And then I know it's off planet because again, the colors are metallic or iridescent.
Oh, yeah.
So what I've learned is that we are everywhere.
Yeah.
That when we meditate, for example, and we meditate on something and we give our thoughts and our hopes to the universe, to the cosmos, that's going everywhere. It's not just going somewhere in our vicinity or not even just on this planet,
yeah.
but it's reaching all dimensions because we are multidimensional. It's
yeah.
just that we can't focus on that. We'd go crazy. And I think, frankly, and I knew this years ago when I was working in human services, that one of the problems that people have that get them put into mental hospitals is that they are that they're not able to limit their perception to the self that is
yeah.
dominated by the ego, but
yeah.
rather they are picking up on other aspects of themselves
mm-hmm.
that makes them what we say crazy and feel.
I totally agree with you. I feel like it's almost like they're so overstimulated. And it's like, I don't know about you, but there's times when I am meditating, I have to kind of pull back all parts and pieces back to me because I'm feeling like I'm spread out. And I agree with you with the mental illness component. I also add in people with, you know, extrasensory, you know, almost, I don't know if autism, if I put on that spectrum, but I do feel like there's something with the extrasensory and people being overwhelmed by their senses, and it's all, you know, and it could be how they're brought up. It could be, but I do feel like it's because we're everywhere all at once. And if you don't have someone say, no, this is okay, let's pull it back in or whatever you need to do. It's hard to like get, cause what if they had a parent that was like, you're crazy, you know, or they don't want to, you know, open space for them to say, okay, no, let's talk about this. What are you really going through? Let's teach you how to ground in and root in and really be firm on this planet in this present moment of now.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
Oh. It goes back to the original sin.
I know. That's right.
I love right. it. Are you, so I know that you also teach people how to kind of do their own soul portraits.
I do.
I'm really, 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 I cannot wait. I know you're coming back to New York, and I totally want to take a class.
Well, I'm going to, little advertisement here. I'm going to be teaching the healing intuitive art of energy portraiture on November 8th.
November 8th.
I think it's a Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday.
From 11 to 4 in Colony Center.
Yeah.
In the Mind, Body, Spirit Center.
I love that. Now, how did you shift from doing these soul portraits, you know, and channeling it to teaching people how to tap in and do their own portraits?
Part of the work that I had done with people before I started doing energy portraits was taking them through guided visualizations that would help them expand and rise into the divine, if possible, mm-hmm. certainly into a larger, expanded version of themselves to experience the peace and the letting go of stress and tension.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that is the principal skill needed in doing energy portraits.
Gotcha.
Is that you need to be able to rise above your conventional, limited view of what's possible.
Yeah.
And the rest is we go from there. One of the things that I do in the class is at the very end, well, not the very end, but toward the end, we practice what it's like to use pastels. And I bring the pastels and the paper. They are the same archival quality materials that I use to make my portraits.
Oh, I love that.
And I do that because in the beginning, I wasn't giving people high quality materials because I couldn't afford it. And
yeah.
I thought, oh, you know, I'll use this one. And one of my clients who was herself a teacher of spiritual reality said, you know, this is not a good experience. They're not coming out looking like yours. Why is that?
And I thought,
it's because they're really inferior materials. Ooh.
Yeah.
So I apologize to everyone who might be listening who ever went to one of my classes and did that. But so now I use my materials.
Okay.
So first we practice what it's like. So people are comfortable and they just play. They play. I give them lots of paper, lots of colors. And then we do a series of meditations, or depending on the time, only one meditation.
Yeah.
And it's really a guided visualization in which I take people up through the colors. And then at the end, because their eyes are closed during the meditation, I say, okay, with your eyes still closed, reach over to where you have your pastels and pick up one of them and just start making marks on paper according to the vision that you are having right now in your experience. So eyes closed. And then after about 2 minutes, I say, okay, you can open your eyes. Well, I was doing a class several years ago and I started coughing. I mean, the kind of coughing where you want to leave the room because it sounds awful.
Right.
And it's embarrassing and you're gagging. And I coughed and coughed and coughed and coughed and I couldn't come back into the room. And meanwhile, when I had left the room, I made eye contact with someone sitting near me who was in the class, but who I knew was also a teacher of spiritual stuff. And I knew that she would kind of take over, although she didn't know what was supposed to come next either. I came back into the room about 15 minutes later. They still had their eyes closed. The whole class did their portraits with their eyes closed, and most of them were beautiful.
Wow.
I was stunned. Yes. And so, and it was true that in a couple of classes that I've led since then, a couple of people have chosen to do the whole thing with their eyes closed.
That's so funny.
Yeah, because that indicates, you know, you trust your hand to pick up the pastel, this the color, the crayon, whatever you want to call it, that is the color that needs to be what you're working with then and there. And it works out.
Wow.
Right. So it was kind of a natural progression.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I had come to this practice after a lifetime of meditating and of seeing with my intuition things that were not there in my physical reality. And so, because that's what my preparation had been, I knew that that was the preparation that my students would have to go through as well. So that's what I did.
In your awakening journey, you mentioned meditating a couple of times. Do you feel like meditating is key for anyone that's on a spiritual journey? One of the
I'm pausing because I know some of the most spiritual people that I know don't come to spiritual classes. They don't read. I'm talking spiritual in quotes. They don't read about the spiritual journey. They're just on the ground in human services, doing the work, and their ethics are as high. Their ethics are perfectly high. That's a spiritual life. Right?
Definitely.
So I would say, no, I don't think that meditating is necessary. But I do think that being able to contact some element of being, whether it is sitting on a beach and letting your mind wander, which is a form of meditation, or taking a walk in the woods, centering yourself in other than the demands that other people, including your own anxiety and your own worries, put on you is necessary.
That I would agree with. It's interesting because I am I'm somebody who doesn't really meditate, so to be honest. But I do make it an effort. Like you said, I have put my ego as a conscious bystander. So I make sure to set that intention and to rise up to the highest realm in which that I can connect with, which I know that you did talk about, like for you, you try to go up to the highest realm of consciousness in which that you can connect with to pull down the divine information.
That's right. I do. And I did that. I always, like when I would begin to meditate, to go into my higher being, I always had the feeling of going up. And that didn't surprise me. Excuse me. That didn't surprise me because of that initial childhood experience in which up was where I knew my home was. Well, in the 90s, I went to a conference in Saratoga, and Ameo Amiot led a morning meditation in which she had us go down into the earth. And I thought, this doesn't make sense to me. Well, several years later, I went into a class of shamanic awareness, again, at the same conference. It was the International Women's Writing Guild conference, in which there was a lot of spiritual content. And I went to a class taught by Paula Scardamalia. And she, we began talking, or she began talking, and then she said, okay, we're going to go on a journey. And I'm sitting there thinking, what can you learn from one class? Because I knew nothing about shamanic work or even what it was, but I was intrigued. And so we were sitting there, and I was preparing to go up, and then the drum started, boom, 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 down immediately.
Yeah.
Holy cow. I sank immediately. I sank into a realm I had never been in before. I found myself sitting in the deep, deep, deep darkness on a blanket that was dark. And across from me was a being who was so real and so shocking that I could not stop looking at her. The being was, I call her Skeleton Woman in my head. This being was a strong female presence.
Yeah.
She was entirely covered by a cloak of brown and white and gray speckled feathers, small feathers, cloak entirely around her, except for her face, but she didn't have a face.
Right.
It was a skull, broad white skull, big dark eye holes. And through the eye holes, I could see galaxies. And so I kept on looking through these eye holes as I wanted to see the galaxies. And she said to me, don't look at me, look at your life. And 3 months later, I left my husband. That experience of going down brought me to the place I needed to be, brought me to a presence that helped me see that I needed to look at my life. It was amazing. It was amazing.
Oh my goodness. Have you ever seen her again?
Yes. In fact, I because the whole process, as you may be able to understand, of leaving one spouse who I loved was so awful. I spent hours and hours every day in meditation and looking and finding. I came to understand that the name by which this presence is most known is Kali, the great dark mother.
I had a feeling.
And Kali became my best friend. And I saw many faces of Kali.
Yeah.
And she's still a presence, although I don't, like right now, I can feel her around me.
Yeah.
Not that stern.
Yeah. You know,
I needed stern. I needed, get your shit together, lady. And I still, you know, we all need that. But I can, like, not right now, I'm tingling because I can feel the presence around me.
Yeah.
So, yes, going up was the way I began. But then I found that going down was, you need both. And I'm not saying that everyone has to go to a shamanic healing class or learn about shamanism to do that. But I needed to be able to find the ground of my own being. And that's what I found through the whole process then that followed, through the guidance of that part of myself that is Gnostic, G-N-O-S-T-I-C, that has to do, that part of myself that is rooted, and it's part of the deep primal archetype of becoming into becoming, using the grit and the stones and the throwing up and the sobs and the stuff that doesn't feel all airy-fairy, because that's part of being human too.
Of course. Now, you've explained or described a lot of your experiences are very visual. Did you ever have moments where these visions or these sights that you kind of, you maybe were uncomfortable with, and what did you do about that? Or if, did you ever feel like that, I should say?
No.
Yeah, I've always felt comforted.
I've always felt, if not comforted, then even this event with Kali sitting there, it was not comforting, but it was in a way, because I knew that I was in the presence of reality and that reality was holding me and insisting. If I didn't have the courage to sit there and I wanted to escape looking through those dark eye holes, I knew that reality was saying, I've got you. No, you're sitting here. So
you like, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Do you feel like that inner knowing, that inner comfort came from when you had that experience when you were five?
I think that that experience when I was five anchored me to a sense of myself, a sense of my eternal self. Yeah. That I have been able to navigate for the most part without fear. I can also remember as a child, I had to walk. I walked 3 miles to school through the snow. Well, I didn't, but I did walk half a mile 4 times a day when I was in elementary school. And in those days, yes, children walked by themselves to their school.
Yeah.
So I can remember walking on this path, and I probably wasn't any more than 6. And I saw someone walking on the other side of the street, and I got an uncomfortable prickly feeling. And so I ran, and they were on the other side of the street. But all my life, I have been aware of when someone felt funny, felt prickly and icky, and I would make sure that I wasn't anywhere near them. So that's the way I've kept myself safe, is staying away from what felt off.
Yeah, no, I can really understand.
Yeah, off. And that would have been dangerous.
Yeah. It's interesting. When we missed the bus, we had to walk to school, which was probably About 5 miles, if not
longer. That's a long walk.
Yeah. I used to live in Georgia, and those were the days. I love that. So with your energy portraits, I also know that you communicate with animal and interspecies. Was that something that came along with the energy portraits, or is it something that you developed over time?
Did not come along with the energy portraits. So
totally separate.
Totally separate. I have communicated with angels and with entities who don't live on the earth, but who live elsewhere. Communicating with the captain of a spaceship, or with someone on another planet. So that's why I use interspecies.
Gotcha.
But animal communication started when, sorry about my cough. When my son, my only child, went off to college, I went through the empty nest syndrome.
Oh, wow.
I went into his bedroom and cried. And I thought, and he just was in Delhi, New York, which is an hour and a half away from Schenectady.
Yeah.
So, which is where I was still living. And I said that to myself, he's not dead. He's just in Delhi. And I realized right then I need horses. I've always loved horses, never had a horse, but I loved horses.
Right.
So I called someone that I knew who had a herd of horses. And I said, this is what happened. Can I come over and be with your horses? And he said, yes, you can come over and feed them 7:30 in the morning and 7:30 at night. Cool. So I began doing that. And I did that for him for a while. And then I went to another barn and I was doing it for these other horses. And one day in the barn, I saw a set of cassette tapes that was book on tape.
Mm-hmm.
And the title was something like How to Communicate with Animals. And I'm kicking myself that I didn't write down the exact name of the book or the author.
Yes.
I really want to give this person credit. I know it was a woman. I have asked a number of notable women animal communicators. Yeah. Did you write this book? No, I can't find this person. But I listened to the tapes and I learned in however many hours it took me to listen how to do it. And because I had been meditating all those years, it was easy for me to get into the inner space in which the communication happens. That's how I learned to do it. And then I did it. The very next afternoon, I went home and I tuned into my cat, and my cat said, I want wet food. And that was the last time I talked to my cat.
Wow.
But I've written a book about my animal communication experience. Oh. It is currently sitting on the desk in an agent's office in Paris, which is thrilling that I wrote to this agent 2 years ago and said, are you still accepting proposals?
Yeah.
And he said, I had honed my pitch letter very well because I did have a communications career, you know.
Yeah.
So I wrote this really good pitch letter, very, very brief. And he said, yes, send me your manuscript. So because I had told him it was already done, I sent it to him and he got back immediately. He said, yes, we want this book. And I haven't heard from him since. And I know because I've talked to other people who've had publishing experience, be patient. And in fact, he even said to me, be patient. So I'm being patient. But I have written a book, and the first chapter is all about that first experience that I had, not with my cat, but with the horses that I was grooming in this other barn. And it was a very moving experience that really taught me. I'll tell you very briefly. Sure. I don't know how much time we have left.
A little bit.
So there were these two horses that were like bonded at the hip. One was 9 years old. The other was much younger.
Yeah.
They were both pregnant. And so the one that had never foaled before, I was grooming her. And I said, oh, Springer, your baby is growing and how beautiful. And she said, I don't want this baby. I said, and she said it like, just like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, this is a real being in here. This is just like talking to a person.
Yeah.
So I knew I had to be real. There was nothing airy-fairy about
this.
Right,
right, right.
It was real.
Right.
I said, oh, my God. And so I asked her why. She said, the other horse, whose name I'm, Allie. Allie told me it's not good to have babies. Oh. So I brought her back and I brought Allie and I said, Allie, you told Springer it's not good to have babies. Why is that? She said, I said, Allie, you told Springer it's not good to have babies. Why is that? And she said, because they leave you.
Oh, that's so sad.
These were brood mares.
Yeah.
Their job was to have foals that would then be sold.
That's so sad.
That's so sad. And I told the owner of the horses, because she was the one who had left. She was the one who had left the tapes for me.
Yeah.
I told her this.
Yeah.
She felt awful, but I don't know what she did. But that was my first experience.
And I think us, as we don't even think about that. That, you know what I mean? Like it's not a human experience. It's a soul experience in a animal body
that that's has right.
feelings, thoughts. Wow.
And that's what we are.
Right.
We
exactly. Are we're having a human experience. Right.
Right. In an animal body. Right.
In an animal body. So there's a person that I follow and she calls it your body. So you have a physical body, our meat sack. So our body deva with our soul and our soul deva. And
right. Right. Oh. So that was the experience that taught me to be humble.
Yeah.
That taught me to be real. Yeah. I wasn't the great spiritual teacher coming to extract information or help these animals. I was their equal. I was another creature saying, hey, how you doing?
Right.
What can I do to help? And thank you for letting me in.
Wow. I love that. I love that. So I do want to ask you I have a couple questions before we wrap up. And I want to ask you this. How have your abilities to help people changed over time as your own wisdom has increased?
Ask the question again.
How have your abilities such as your soul portraits, your animal.
Oh, how have my abilities changed?
Yes. As your own wisdom has deepened.
I don't know that my ability. Well, I am able to be more honest and more whole with people because I am not afraid to tell them what I experience as their truth, as I am giving them the information that they've asked for.
I love that.
I don't hold back. I don't know that I ever did hold back.
Yeah.
But I think my ability to embrace whatever I hear or see for people has become wider and easier to flow forward with, because I know that it is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It is coming from their own expanded being. It is whatever comes through is something that they need to hear. And I am just the messenger. It is not my truth that I'm giving them.
Mm-hmm.
I am honestly only saying what I hear for them.
I love that.
And so I don't know that I ever gave in. I hope I didn't. I may have to the desire to make something clearer or easier for people. If I pass on what I hear and if they say, could you tell me more of what that means? All I can do is go back to source and ask again and say, this person is asking again. Is there another way to say this? So I keep my ego out of it.
Gotcha.
And it's easier to do that as my own abilities have increased, as my own complex awareness of what's going on has increased. I am more able to be comfortable with what I'm experiencing. And that comfort means I'm not going to try to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. And I know that I never wanted to, and I hope that I never did.
But I want to ask you this, but there are times where there is certain information that's not meant to be unfolded. Do you know what I mean? And I would imagine you probably get that. It's not time for you to know this yet.
Right. And I say that.
Yeah.
And this actually this really mostly happens with animal communication.
Ooh.
That because a lot of times the animals will say about, because when someone says, I want to know what my animal has to say to me, and I say, what do you have to say to your person? Quite frequently, the answers that I get are not only, I love this person, I'm so grateful for them, I would like to walk on green grass, whatever it is, but this person is in a relationship and the relationship has these problems and this person needs to deal with the relationship in ways that they haven't been able to. And there are certain things that haven't unfolded yet.
Yeah.
That will unfold. Yeah. It's like that.
Interesting.
Because again, I'm tapping into the animal's highest consciousness.
Right.
And that's, so that brings us back to what I was saying before.
Yeah.
I have come to realize that we all life, every individuated being, including stones and blades of grass, are filters for the whole massive divine experience. Mm-hmm. And so the filter is what determines the language and the message.
Mm-hmm.
There may be a, not the message, but the specific way the message is brought forth.
Gotcha.
So I ask a horse, what would you like to say to your beloved? And the horse is the filter for the divine. And the divine is saying through the horse, there is a darkness there that she is not yet dealing with, that she will deal with when she can.
Wow, that's interesting. So one last thing before we wrap this up, is there any piece of advice that you would give to the listeners in regards to either their spiritual journey or their awakening journey or just any piece of wisdom that you may have?
I'm sending up for this. Let the truth of your own being be the only arbiter of the words that you say and of the paths you take. The paths that you take are completely up to you. No one has the right to tell you to take a path that is not that which will serve you best, because that which will serve you best is the path that will serve the divine and all being best. Let the truth of your own being, let sitting on the ground, let jumping up into the air, let any kind of experience you have while you are in this body be the precious teacher, and take every lesson to heart, explore it, open your eyes wide to everything you are and everything you see and everything you hear, because this human experience is the reason that you are here listening and watching and hoping. This human experience is the great teacher, not what you may read, not what you may ever listen to, not what you will spend $1,000 to learn, but your own human experience. When you enter it with your heart and your eyes and your ears open and your palms up to experience the flow of the great river that is all of life.
I love that. That's amazing.
And I concur. Little me concurs.
I love that. And the best way for anyone to reach you is to go to your website, lightspeak.com.
Lightspeak.com. My address and my phone number are there. And I look forward to hearing from anyone about anything, even, are you full of crap? Because
I want to thank you so much for joining us for this Spiritual Spotlight series. I am so grateful that you joined us today and I look forward to connecting with you soon.
I am thrilled that you asked. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope that you found the episode to be enlightening and insightful. Our goal is to create content that not only entertains, but also helps you grow spiritually and connect with your inner self. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, we would greatly appreciate if you could take a moment to like, subscribe, and write a review. Your feedback is incredibly valuable to us and helps us to improve the quality of our content and to reach a wider audience. We believe that by sharing knowledge and insights about spirituality, we can help inspire positive change and personal growth. So if you found our podcast to be meaningful and informative, we encourage you to share it with your friends and family. Thank you once again for your support and for joining us on this journey of self-discovery and spiritual growth. We look forward to sharing more episodes with you in the future.